How are we doing this morning? Yeah, we're back. Thrilled Hockey Report live coming to you on 12 Ounce Sports Zingo TV channel 761. Cody Jansen with you here. Oh boy, a lot to talk about. We got some breaking news to start this thing off. Johnny Boychuk gonna have to call it quits after an injury. That sucks. I mean, that's one of the good guys of the game, you know, just a great guy, teammate, you know, one of those guys who no one ever says anything bad about. So that sucks to hear. Oh man, it's been a tough past couple of days for the hockey world. A lot to get into though, and there's a lot of positives still going on, so we don't want to sit here and complain about the negatives. We'll talk some good hockey, of course. Joining us as well, we'll snap it over to the great province of Saskatchewan. Adam Ermentrout is with me. Buddy, what's up?
Not much, man. What are you doing?
Just hanging out. You know, it looks like we're going into another half-ass lockdown, so I'm not exactly sure what that's going to mean, you know, what's going to be getting changed, but, you know, just trying to live life as normal as possible. It sucks. I was really hoping to watch a little bit more hockey, you know, yesterday, this weekend, but who knows? You know, just getting by, waiting for an NHL season to hopefully start soon.
Yeah, I know, and I mean, they keep saying January 1st, but that's like 35 days away, so who knows even.
I don't see January 1st working. Like, that's so quick. That's such a quick turnaround. There's so many things that need to be put in place. I don't know. Like, I don't want to be a pessimist. I just don't see that happening. That seems wishful thinking, to say the least, on the NHL's behalf. Like, Gary Bettman talking about that is just wild.
Yeah, and if they really wanted the season to start, they wouldn't have reopened these labor negotiations again.
Yeah, like, what's your thoughts on that? I guess we might as well get into it. Like, it's kind of expected that they're going to ask the players to take a pay cut, but they did just sign a new CBA last year before the playoffs, if I remember right.
Yep.
So why, like, what's your thoughts on that? Like, as a player's perspective, I don't see why they should have to budge. I understand why some players are going to want to budge because they want to play. It's a lot different if you're Connor McDavid or someone who's made, you know, 50 sheets in their career, or if you're someone on an entry-level deal or a bubble player who's just hoping for that crack at it.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, there's definitely some owners that I think don't want to play, right? Like, you're spending money on your team and not making any, right? Like, there's no fans or anything. Obviously, fans pay the bill. So I really don't know. It's a lot of legal talk and stuff like that, but I mean, it's tough. Like, nobody really saw this coming, and now it's a lot of millionaires kind of doing this and that.
Yeah, we'll leave it to the experts like Alan Walsh, right?
Yeah, the experts.
Alrighty, well, there is a lot to get into, and I mean, even a new contract signed for Boston. I guess, do we want to start there with Jake DeBrusk or what?
Yeah, sure. I guess you're local boy there.
Yeah, no, a great, good Edmonton kid. I knew a bunch of buddies that actually went to school with him up around here. I think he's a Vimy kid, so I think that's a good deal. It's 2 years, just over $3 million a year. I think first year's around just over two, second year's just over four. So I think that's a good deal. And Adam, I tweeted out, I said team-friendly deals mean playoff contenders. I think that's true with Boston. I really think that if Jake DeBrusk wanted to be a selfish player, wanted to hold out, he could have. He could have asked for more money. I truly believe that he's probably worth over $4 million a year for what he brings to the team. So I think this is a good team-friendly deal. I think, you know, it's pretty fair for the player as well. It's not like he's getting crazy underpaid, but the team's locking up a good forward for less than $4
million. Yeah, and I mean, that's the kind of Boston motto and why they're so good, right? Like, they have some sort of internal cap at like $7 million. I guess their highest paid player is Krejci, but Marchand, Pastrnak, Bergeron are all under seven, so it's pretty crazy. I mean, for DeBrusk, he's a good player, and I think he has like 30, 35 goal potential, but he just hasn't hit it yet for whatever reason. Like, every game I've seen him play, he's in it and he's there, but I don't think, like, he looks like he should be getting more points and producing more than he is. Like, 2 years ago, he had 27 goals. Last year, he only had 19. And, I mean, he looks really good a lot of the time, but the numbers don't always show up.
I think you got to, you know, take the points for what it's worth, where he does bring other stuff. He brings a lot of energy. He's a guy who's always moving his feet. He's not afraid to throw his weight around. He's not afraid to get into the dirty areas. He's a versatile player. Well, he can play on your second power play unit. He can kill penalties. He can play up and down your lineup. I think that is what is his main value. I don't think they're counting on him to be a top line guy. I don't think they're counting on him to be a 25 goal scorer every single season. If it happens, great. If not, he still contributes in other ways.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like he's the first guy over the boards on the power play or anything like that. So looking at his points and the structure of the contract, it's a good deal.
I would agree there. You know, one thing I did forget to mention off the top, I know we kind of mentioned Johnny Boychuk, but even bigger news from yesterday, Fred Sisakamoos, you know, Saskatchewan legend. I mean, this guy, you said it best in your tweet, Adam. You know, he paved the way for a lot of First Nations hockey players. Doesn't matter if you're from Saskatchewan, Alberta, anywhere really. I mean, this guy was a trailblazer. He truly was. He touched so many lives, and I don't know who, like, I don't have proper accreditation for this story, but one thing that I've always heard about him, and I never got to meet him in person, but, you know, he always said his calling wasn't to play in the NHL. That wasn't his calling. He wanted to do more. He wanted to do more for First Nations kids, you know, people. I mean, he was a chief. He did so much for that community, and, you know, it sucks. You lose a legend. It really puts into perspective how serious COVID is, how it can affect some people, but all in all, just, you know, it's a legend gone too soon. I don't know if you had anything to say on that.
I mean, definitely gone too soon. I mean, realistically, he could have stayed in Chicago or really wherever he finished up his career, and I mean, he decided to go back to Saskatchewan and serve as a chief, and I mean, like, just developing a lot of sports programs for I guess First Nations kids. And I mean, I think if you talk to any First Nations guy who's played in the NHL, they definitely would have looked up to him.
Oh, I agree, and there's so many, you know, he held tournaments in Saskatchewan. That's where I think a lot of people around my age would have met him. But I know he also did a lot for the NHL and the league and stuff, and I believe even up to last season, he dropped the ceremonial puck drop for Calgary Winnipeg, correct? Or was that previous years?
Yeah, at the Heritage Classic.
Yeah, okay, I thought it was. I was pretty sure there, and I know he, when the Oilers had a special night up here. I know he was up here when they were playing the Blackhawks. So, man, it's a tough loss for the hockey world. It sucks. I know we cover hockey, but I'd be, you know, reminiscent if I didn't mention Diego Maradona as well. Like, that's, you know, passed away today at the age of 60, I do believe. Adam, have you watched that documentary on Maradona?
No, I've heard a lot about it, though.
It's crazy. Honestly, I would highly recommend watching it because, man, that guy lived. Like, that is something else. His whole story about, like, you know, being the highest paid athlete or person in the world at one point in time, just everything he was doing was absolutely insane. Would definitely recommend watching.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out.
Okay, moving on back to hockey talk. Hockey Canada camp. Did you watch any of those exhibition games? I know they had two before things got shut down. They had two COVID cases within the team or players. Names haven't been identified yet, which is fine. But, you know, like, did you get to watch any of the games at least?
No, I wasn't able to catch all of them. I had my own hockey stuff going on.
Oh, what's the coaching weekend record? I didn't ask.
0-2. We're
no.
We're getting screwed a bit by COVID here. Like, the
excuses.
Like, we're missing, I think, three top six forwards. Just because there's this new rule, you have to quarantine if somebody in your class gets it. So we're missing three top six forwards. Like, we're playing whatever, lose 4-2 Saturday, and then Sunday in Battleford, we're dressing 7 forwards, the kid gets hurt, a D-man moves up, so 7 forwards, like, guys are playing 27, 28 minutes, we go up.
That's nothing.
So we get the first two power plays of the game, score on both of them, go up 2-0. The power plays the rest of the game are 7-1. We're up 3-0 going to the third. They called five penalties on us in the third. I'm not a ref guy, but I mean, when the power plays are 5-0 in the third and the one team's up 3-0 and they end up losing, like, that's interesting. So
that was in Battlefords, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, I got a crazy Battleford story too. Sorry, continue.
Yeah, no, you're not getting those calls there, so that was tough, but I mean, it's the nature of the year, right? Like we stay in this game with missing three veteran guys, and I mean, you have to think if we have those guys, like we're not losing that game.
Okay, funny story about Battlefords, and I mean, everyone knows the reffing really doesn't matter what level it's at. You know, it's going to be suspect. Let's be realistic and blunt here. But it was a few years ago, so it was when I was back in the school there. I think it was the year before. So I had a bunch of buddies playing in that senior league. It's like the SPHL or whatever you want to call it, right? And so they're up there. It's like game 7 or game 5 of the finals, right? It's the last game, right? It's game 7. Everything's on the line. Man, I forget who it was. It might have been like Edam or someone was up like 4-0 in like going into the third period. And Battlefords, like they were playing at home and they had 10 power plays in the third period. They won like 5 or 6-4. After the game, there was a huge like championship game. So Battlefords wins the league championship and there's a bench brawl after. There's a video on YouTube. It's hilarious. If I find it, I'll tweet it out. But just wild stuff happens in Battlefords.
Yeah, that's a different place.
Was it at the old dump too? Like, or was it at the new rink?
No, we were at the SJ one.
Oh, okay. That's a little bit better than like where the Blues and I think their under 18 female team plays there as well, I do believe, at the old rink.
Yeah, the Sharks.
Yeah, that's whatever they are. Okay, back to Hockey Canada though. I know you didn't watch the games. Quick summary, like Kirby Dach's a stud. This guy is—he's too good, and it really pisses me off even more now that he's not going to be able to play with like Lafreniere and those guys. It's like, just release them. What good are they doing sitting at home in their gym? You know, I don't know. Individual skills training, I get it. Let the kids play if you're eligible. Get there. Jack Hughes, Kaapo Kakko, is he still eligible? Maybe not. I don't know. Like, there just seems like there's so many players who could make this the best World Junior tournament of all time, potentially. And we're not going to see that because these teams are afraid that, you know, an 18 or 19-year-old might get injured playing World Juniors versus an exhibition game. Like, is there not the exact same injury risk in playing someone in World Juniors as playing an 18-year-old in a NHL exhibition game? I would say it's arguably there's more of a risk to get injured in an NHL exhibition game where these guys are playing against 30-year-old full-grown men, guys in their prime.
Yeah, it's close. I'd argue though that like the big World Junior games are probably more intense than an NHL exhibition game. But at the same time, like I don't really see the benefit of telling Lafreniere or something to just practice or something. Like, he hasn't played since, what is it, March? So I'm not sure. Like, you can kind of tell, like, just listening to a bunch of people who watch the games and stuff, like, they said that Kirby Dach looked like a guy who played in the NHL last year.
Well, he did.
They said Byfield has struggled a little bit. It's not like it really matters for, like, him and everybody's making a big deal of Dach and Cousins, like, being on time for practice or whatever. And it's interesting, though. You kind of look at the lines and you can kind of see, like, who the locks are and then who the guys on, like, the outside looking in are. Like, Byram and Drysdale is clearly, like, your top pairing. Braden Schneider and Thomas Harley looks like a pairing. Caden Gooley and Caden Korzak looks like a pairing. Like, you can kind of just, like, weed your way out, like, judging who's, like, the 10th board or whatever and stuff like that.
Oh, I fully agree with that. Okay, also, we'll talk about the unfortunate part. A couple of players ended up getting COVID. And so now they have to decide who was in close contact with them and stuff like that. It's kind of a weird situation where, I mean, from what I'm hearing, from what, you know, a couple of people pretty close to the situation have said is that, you know, they both, well, not both of them. Holy good English. One of them was in the game at least one. And so I'm not a doctor, but would that not mean that they were in close contact with everyone?
Yeah, you'd have to think, but
so then if that's the case and their agreement with the provincial government or whoever they made this agreement with is that if something happens, then everyone has to quarantine for 2 weeks. Everyone who's in close contact, no questions. So that just that screws them out. Well, bad choice. That makes them miss their exhibition games against the U of A this weekend and Mount Royal next weekend. Does that not raise some sort of a red flag in Hockey Canada's method of testing these guys properly before they came here? Because as the NHL proved, if everyone was tested properly, quarantined properly, it didn't happen. They were safe. No COVID cases happened in the bubble. Hockey Canada needs to take some responsibility here, in my opinion, on, I know, like guys like Ridly Gregg tested positive before. Who's to say it wasn't him again? But they need to do a better job. They failed the kids. They failed everyone involved by allowing this to get to this point, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm not too sure like what the deal is in Red Deer. Like, they're technically in a bubble, and I'm sure that there's only a set number of like food places they can order from and all that, but it's not really a bubble. Like, there's still people coming in and out of the hotel, people serving them, people doing this and that, and I don't really know like what the protocol is at all. And I mean, it's crazy to think, right? Like, Edmonton went from being a bubble city because of the lack of cases, and now like they wouldn't even be in the top 25 to host a NHL team.
No, it's a joke up here. But that's, man, we might as well. I mean, we've always been pretty straight shooter. You tweeted out about government politics yesterday. Now I get my turn to rant. It's an absolute joke what they're doing up here. I get it. Like, they want to slow the spread, and I totally agree that needs to happen. But doing this half-ass lockdown is the biggest embarrassment possible. I mean, politics are an absolute joke. Doesn't matter if you like the UCP, NDP, Liberal, Conservative, Democrat, Republican. I really don't give a shit. I mean, this half-ass lockdown stuff is the biggest pathetic joke ever. Why can someone go to Walmart and buy a bike or a hockey stick, but they can't go to a sports shop? They can't go to a local bike shop. They have to close because they're not essential. Why can 25% capacity go to a casino, but you can't go to a hockey game with more than 100 people when some of these rinks seat 4,000? It's absolutely pathetic what they're doing. And, you know, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing for the fact that I want this to be taken as serious as anyone else. And I agree. I mean, a lockdown would absolutely it would suck. But if you're going to do it properly. Don't half-ass it, because this is just going to increase the amount of time where we're not going to get hockey. Minor hockey won't be able to play. You know, junior hockey is going to struggle. It's pathetic. It's embarrassing. And frankly, I don't know. The people in charge are just a joke at this point.
Yeah, it's a little ridiculous when everybody's making those jokes about, like, when their grandma comes to visit them, that they're going to go to the mall and the casino and church, but she can't stay at their house. And I mean, it's kind of interesting. Just you look at the case tracking and stuff like that, and a lot of it is from high schools and nursing homes and stuff like that. And like, I haven't really seen a case about somebody going to like a gym or a hockey rink or like a mall and getting it, right? Like, it's been a lot of schools and close contact and a lot of these gatherings, right? So you can eliminate the gatherings, but I don't think you need to like shut down all these things that you're shutting down.
And here, Adam, I mean, how are you only allowed 10 people? I totally get circumstance has to play a huge part here, but how are you only allowed 10 people at a funeral, but you can have 1,000 in a big casino? You can, you know, you can put thousands in Costco. It doesn't make any sense. Like, don't know. I've got too many issues with it. Yeah. We can make a 17-hour show. I'm sure people want us to move on a little bit here. But frankly put, I feel bad for, you know, everyone affected by it. But a lot of it comes down to, you know, just incompetence at the highest level. And that's just government in general. Okay, moving along. Shout out to the Flin Flon Bombers. I'm sorry that your season's been ruined. Like, you know, it's you got to take 2 months off now because of Manitoba's border rules. They can't figure out a place to play. Like, it's just, it's a terrible situation. It sucks for the players. I hope that they're able to put it through. I hope that the SJ just kind of says, all right, you guys can at least play games. You're just not going to be eligible for playoffs after 2 months. Like, I hope they're able to, but, you know, matter of fact, they're in a pretty tough situation as is. Also, how did this tweet not blow up, Adam? I thought this was one of the funniest tweets I've had in a long time. Dave Lowry hired as the Jets assistant coach. I said, okay, does Adam get to call him, not you, Adam Lowry's son, have to call him coach or dad? You know, I thought that was genius.
Yeah.
It got one like.
That's what I was wondering too. I mean, obviously he would have had to sign off on it because the Blue Jays did the same thing with Bo Bichette and Dante Bichette. And I think Bo was saying that at the ballpark he's coach, but away from it he's dad. And I'd assume that's the same with Dave Lowry, just knowing some guys who have played for him and some guys who have been around him that, you know, he's a really good coach. He's a hard-nosed guy, wants what's best for his players, but, you know, you're going to have to work for it.
He was in Brandon before, correct?
Yeah, he went from, like, head coach in Victoria to assistant in L.A. to Brandon and now to Winnipeg. So, I mean, he went from that's a bit of a tough yeah. couple of years there. You go from beautiful Victoria, L.A. to Brandon.
Yeah, to beautiful Winnipeg. Don't forget that one.
Yeah, to Winnipeg, yeah. So,
oh.
I mean, yeah, good for him, though. Like, I mean, it's pretty cool. Like, I don't know, was that, like, the first father-son coaching pairing? I can't think of many others.
Yeah, no, I was counting on you for that. That was on my question list. I'm not the one to ask.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of like guys who have coached their sons, but
stat guy Adam, cut him. Getting paid this week. Okay, well, do we want to talk Emily Kaplan or do we want to talk some Thanksgiving?
Yeah. Well, we can talk this thing to wrap up our hockey stuff. So Emily Kaplan of ESPN, she does great work. She released the best and worst contracts for each team, and I mean, the best ones are pretty obvious for a lot of these teams, like MacKinnon, Barkov, Dylan Larkin, John Klingberg, Seth Jones. Like, a lot of those are obvious, but some of the worst contracts, like, they've been signed in the last 2 years, even. Like, anybody who signed in 2017 with Ladd, Neil Lucic, and then, I mean, anybody who was up for the Norris Trophy in 2018 or whatever it was, like PK Subban, Drew Doughty, Mark Edward Blast, like San Jose, and this is probably the biggest one on here. San Jose pretty much has three guys eligible, and they're their top three defensemen.
Yeah, the Carlson deal's not looking too good.
It's not even that one, though.
Who's worse, Vlasic?
Vlasic, yeah. He's got until 25, 26, 7 million a year.
Ooh.
And he wasn't good. Burns is at 8 until 2024.
Burns is still a stud, though, and you won't convince me otherwise.
No, Burns is good, but I mean, Carlson, like, he signed that contract, and then he had half an ankle left, like.
Yeah, I think the Sens honestly dodged a bullet. Could you imagine if they had him under that contract and you're trying to rebuild? Like, that's like three players you can't sign because of that.
Well, I mean, Drew Doughty's LA's guy on here, and I mean, he's still a great defenseman. He plays on a horrid team, but
that's a terrible take. How's Drew Doughty have a bad contract? He's like one of the best defensemen in the Pacific.
I think it's like the 11 million through 2026, right? So,
yeah, I'll give the golden X to that one. That's an odd take I can go with.
Guess who the least worst one is?
What are they going to say, like John Tavares or something?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's not a huge surprise. Like we've said it before. Like, is he a good player? Yes. Is he a good leader? Yes. Was he a necessary move? No. Was he a move that's going to win him a Stanley Cup? I don't think so.
Yeah. Like, I mean, if they win the Stanley Cup in his contract, nobody's going to care. But we've said it how many times. You take a $4.5 million good value for Kadri, then you make him a third line center. You sign Tavares, so you don't really need. He gets 47 goals, and then last year it's not like he was horrible, but there was a lot of games where Leafs fans had the pitchforks out ready to throw him out of town because he just couldn't keep up. And for a guy who always hasn't been a great skater, in a faster league, it's not great, right? Like, so that's interesting. It's not a terrible contract, but a lot of these are like in 3 years. Yikes.
Yeah, it's a tough look. Who was Florida's Bobrovsky? I don't know if I missed that or not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Florida's was Bobrovsky. Montreal's was Price, which I mean,
that's stupid.
Yeah.
Price is the only reason that they won a playoff series.
Yeah, I know, and I mean I don't know. It's Matt Zuccarello's on here too. I don't know why Minnesota decided to give him that. Yeah, Bobrovsky's on here, but at the same time, Florida. But that contract just didn't make sense given the Spencer Knight pick, hey?
Yeah, it was a little weird. We've talked about it before. Like, I still think Spencer Knight's the goalie of the future. I really do for Florida. I think he could be an NHL starter, an all-star, for 12-plus years. I've been on record saying that before. And so I feel he's better than Askarov. No questions asked. I know Askarov's having a great year. I still would take Spencer Knight over him. But now what's the plan? You're not going to trade Bobrovsky. You're going to have to buy him out in 5 years or 6 years. Is he really the guy that you want Spencer Knight learning from? Is he that veteran guy? I don't know what he's like in the room. Guys might love him. He might be the next Brizgalov who... I don't know. Let's not go off on this whole Russian tangent here, but are those guys usually the best veterans? You know, ask Brian Burke about it in Anaheim. I think that'll give you a pretty fair answer.
Yeah, so, no, this is an interesting article. It was just, I think the biggest thing that was amazing for me is that, I mean, so many people who signed after 2017, like Cam Fowler's deal's on here, is bad. Jeff Skinner...
bad.
Went from 40 to 14 goals. Jake Gardner just signed and he's on here. It's the funniest one on here though is Colorado. Guess who their worst contract is?
Colorado worst contract. That's a tough one. I'm thinking it's a D-man. Like, I don't know. What's a guy like Eric Johnson making?
I mean,
I don't know.
Jonas Donskoy, who only makes $3.9 million. So that kind of shows you the job that Joe Sakic's done, hey?
Oh, yeah. Joe's a beauty. Shout out. Went to high school with my dad, too. Like, just an absolute legend where he was so good on ice. He was unbelievable. Arguably, I mean, one of Canada's top performers when it mattered. And now he's just proving that he's smarter than everyone else. Like, him and Steve Yzerman are two perfect hockey minds. And you won't be able to tell me otherwise. I really think that those two could be some of the smartest hockey minds of all time.
Yeah, I mean, no argument here.
Like, and this is no disrespect to Wayne Gretzky. This is no disrespect to Mario Lemieux, Bobby Orr. I don't think they could run a team in that general manager position as well as Steve Yzerman and Joe Sakic have and can and will.
Yeah, I mean, I won't argue that. Like, they just seem to know better. And look at the moves that Sakic's done. And getting a guy like Bowen Byram for Matt Duchene, who is now, like, on the back nine of his career. And it's, like, he's done, right?
Yeah, 100%. Alrighty, we gotta get to a couple of fun things. Hey, it's American Thanksgiving. Shout out if you're American, you're watching this show, you are the absolute best. Also, hat toque order going in this Friday. Watch it. These hats, these toques are sick. Hats are awesome as well. I know Adam's got some on the way. They're fresh. $30 a pop. Support the boys. I mean, come on. This is, you know, we do the hat giveaways. We're gonna bring back World Hockey Report Overtime Challenge for the World Juniors if we sell enough of these toques and hats. We'll hook you guys up. We love you. We appreciate everyone who's supporting. I mean, we're shipping hats over to Europe. We're shipping them all around the world. You guys are the absolute best. Sweaters, you know, if you want that, like, we got them as well. Hoodies, t-shirts, hats, all of the above, just for the best fans in the world. All right, let's talk a little Thanksgiving and Black Friday. Adam, I know you thought Black Friday was last week because you are a clueless clown and you're like, oh, Black Friday deal. Okay, cool. It must be Black Friday. That's funny. Do you like those videos? Like, are you one that's like on Black Friday, you're like sitting on Twitter refreshing it, watching like Black Friday fights or what? Because I find those hilarious.
Yeah, some of those are pretty funny. And like the best, I think my funniest, like Black Friday, just the first thing I think of in Saskatoon especially is people lining outside of Lululemon for like 2 hours just to get like $10 off on a sweater, pants or something like that. Like it's insane. Like a store like that who never really marks anything down or anything because it's been all the same stuff for how long, people keep buying it, like they'll put like 5% off this or something like that and people go crazy for it. Like it's wild.
Really? Okay. I wouldn't have guessed Lululemon. Like, I'm thinking, like, probably, like, TVs, couches. Those are usually the big things. Like, I love just seeing the videos out of the States where, like, people, like, it's just, like, a madhouse running into Walmart and people are grabbing, like, toilet paper and just useless shit.
Yeah, like, and a lot of the sales, it's like, you have to spend $100 to save $10.
Oh, I know. It's overrated. It really is. And like, it's such a marketing term. Like, Black Friday isn't even a thing up here in Canada. Like, people just like jack up the price and they're like, okay, plus you can get an extra 10% off. Like, I mean, that's okay, whatever. Now they're just cutting their margins or whatever, profit margins by a tiny amount. Okay, quickly, last one. Thanksgiving. Are you turkey or ham guy?
Ham. I think turkey's so overrated.
I know, we've got into this before. I don't even know why I asked. That's a stupid take. Ham sucks. Ham's for Christmas. Okay, what's the best side?
I think just like potatoes, honestly, like just mashed potatoes. Like, I don't really like stuffing or cranberry stuff.
Okay. I'm a mashed potato guy. I'm a good, like, you know, a good nice gravy too, not too salty. I'm all for that.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm not like a big pie guy either. Like,
Okay, I'm a big pie guy. I, you know, apple pie, Saskatoon pie, I'm all for it.
Really? I like the Saskatoon berry pie is fine, but a lot of the time it's like you get the pie or whatever and there's just 3 pounds of berries in it and it's just fruit, pretty much, or sugary fruit.
Yeah, I know. It's got to be done right. It really does. But alrighty, we got to get out of here. Clint Malarchuk is coming up next. Cody Jansen, Adam Ermentrout with you on World Hockey Report. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at World Hockey RPT. Buy a toque, buy a hat, support the fellas. I don't care. Sweatshirt, t-shirt, whatever. A lot more content coming your way. Adam, any last words?
No, have a good weekend, everyone.
And Thanksgiving. Don't forget those Americans, Adam.
Yeah, Thanksgiving. Football tomorrow.
Football tomorrow. Yes, that is true. Great betting day. Of course, go to mybookie.ag, promo code 12OunceSports. Back after the break with Clint Malarchuk. It's World Hockey Report. Cody Jansen with you here. 12-Ounce Sports Zingo TV channel 761. No Adam today. He's stepped out for a bit, but now we've got a special guest on. You know, we're both from Saskatchewan, kind of made the trip a little further out west to Alberta, so it's a perfect stop. We get Grand Prairie's finest, Clint Malarchuk, on the show. Clint, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Beautiful day down here in northern Nevada. I'm in the Reno, Tahoe area, and it's probably about 78 degrees. Beautiful. I guess Celsius, I don't know, 23, 24 in there.
Beautiful country down there. So what do you do? I mean, are you big into boating, golfing? What's your day consist of?
Well, I'm pretty much a horseman. I've got horses and, you know, some livestock, but lots of dogs, I'll tell you that. And I'm a certified horse dentist and horse chiropractor. So I've run a horse business down here.
That's awesome. No, that's cool to hear. So did you grow up on a farm by Grand Prairie or what?
Well, not really. I didn't really grow up on a farm. I had when I was a kid, I probably started getting old. And I was probably 18 or 20 years old. I'd spend my summers working on that ranch.
Oh, that's always fun work, you know, living on a ranch. I grew up on a farm, too. Yeah, there was no days off. The farm does not sleep. So then, okay, we got to jump into your junior hockey because, I mean, you ended up playing in Fort Sask to start juniors. I mean, that's, you know, right around where I'm at here. Obviously, it's a big hockey community. What do you remember about playing in Fort Sask? Like, what was it like when you were playing juniors for the Traders?
Well, I was young, I know that. And a lot of the guys, you know, back in those days, juniors, they could range anywhere from, like, 15 years old to being an overage player at maybe 20. So I was there at 15, and we had a great, great team. We had a lot of success. And I just remember the older guys really took me under their wing. And we had a great coach, Gene Timichuk, who's a local man there in Fort Saskatchewan. And his son, Marty, played on the team. And, yeah, those are just great times, a lot of memories. And you know, it was a small town back then. I'm sure it's not that big still, but man, it was real small. There wasn't even a traffic light, and I don't know if there is one now there. But it was just a great. We had this old barn that we played in, a lot of character, and yeah, great memories.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I always thought the Traders were cool. You know, they had those awesome red jerseys. It was kind of like the Buffalo Sabres red ones almost that they went to. Like, it just had that sort of nostalgia to it. So I thought that was cool. And then you ended up, I mean, Portland Winterhawks legend. I mean, you know, you going down to the States, they're playing in Portland. Like, obviously, that's a huge transition for you, especially as a junior player. But what was it like? Like, was Portland still a hockey hotbed back then?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we had great crowds. Like, you know, for junior hockey, we'd get 10 or 12,000 in a beautiful arena, Memorial Coliseum, I believe it's called. And, oh, yeah. In an NHL room. And we had, it was a great grooming for guys that were going to go on and play. We had great. Like I said, and we were kind of like big dogs in that you know, and it was pretty incredible.
Well, yeah, Portland's always, well, I guess, you know, in the past 20 years, they always seem to have a stellar team, but, you know, you go there and, you know, you're a guy who's definitely remembered as one of their, you know, original star goaltenders because you made that jump to the NHL the season after. Did you play in the minors like that first season, or did you start in the NHL with Quebec? How did that work? And like, what was the transition? What was your moment where you're kind of just like, holy, I'm in the NHL right now? Like, what hit you?
Well, I think it was my first training camp. You know, I was like 19 or 20 years old, and you know, my first training camp, and I was, you know, I'm going to humbly say I was in training camp, and we're talking about, you know, they had some, you know, pretty good veteran goaltenders. Dan Bouchard was the number one there, and I was having a better camp than him. And I thought, you know what? My God, I can do this. And I think I opened some eyes too. They didn't have. I was fortunate to be drafted by a team that didn't have a lot of depth in their system in goaltending. So, you know, I had a great training camp, and I think they thought, well, we got a guy here that maybe can step in. I only played a couple games in the NHL my first year. You know, I did my time in the minors, and I learned pro game, learned how to do my own laundry and write my own checks and, you know, pay the bills and, you know, learning experience. But, yeah, it was kind of a moment where I was like, you know, after that camp, I thought, wow, I outplayed Dan Bouchard. Dan Bouchard was a pretty damn good goaltender. And maybe he, you know, being a veteran, he might have not took too serious training camp. You know, still back in those days, it was to get in shape. And, yeah, that was pretty cool. And then, I was up and down from the minors to the NHL for my first few years. And I think my big moment was I had my first NHL game playing the Buffalo Sabres, which I ended up playing for anyways. But, I got second star of that game, and I was like, it's a funny story. I got hit in the head with a slap shot in warm-ups, and I got cut.
Oh, boy.
And so I was getting stitches before my first NHL appearance, and the coach came in, Michel Bergeron, French-Canadian, and goes, oh, kid, you no play tonight. And I was going, no, I'm playing, get me stitched up, and I'm playing. And I ended up playing and had a great game. And, like I said, I was, I think, second star. And I thought, wow, here I am. Unfortunately, it is a funny story, really, because I had such a good game that they put me in the next night. We flew to Long Island to play the Islanders, and this is in their heyday, right? And Stanley Cup champion, dynasty, and we got blown out 10-7. They constantly let in 10 goals, but you know what? Billy Smith at the other end, that is 7, Hall of Famer. So, but the day after that, I was sent back to the minors. So, it's a process, you know, and, you know, I certainly paid my dues in the minors and got to where I could be a steady goaltender in the NHL.
Hey, if you're standing across the ice from Billy Smith, you're doing something right there. Clint Malarchuk, my guest here, World Hockey Report. It's Cody Jansen with you. You know, we're diving into your career a little bit, and I got to talk. I mean, I believe it was the 86-87 season where you were stellar, right? You played like 60 games. I mean, you posted right around a 900 save percentage. I think you were an all-star that year. Like, what was going right for you? Goaltending back then, I've said it a million times, is way harder than it is nowadays, and I guarantee you would agree with that. But, like, were you just feeling it? Were you just like, hey, this is coming easy to me. I'm comfortable now.
Well, I think it's a process, you know, that you go through the minors and, you know, you develop and you, I think for me, the difference was gaining that, every time I went up and down, in the minors in the American, paying your dues. And I think, you know, in the American Hockey League, I was, you know, pretty darn good. And then when I go up to the NHL and play a game or two or three or whatever, I just didn't feel comfortable. And so I had to sit back and think, what is the difference? And, you know, what it is, when you're in the NHL, you know, now you got TV, media, all this, more pressure. So I had to train my mind to handle pressure. And I got a book called Sports Psyching. I studied it. I did the exercises, how to handle the stress and pressure of being an elite athlete, and that's what turned my career into being a steady number one goaltender.
That's crazy. That's actually an awesome story. Clint, I mean, you know, I'm a goalie guy myself too, and you know, growing up, my dad was a goalie as well, and so I loved wearing his old gear. You know, when he was playing street hockey, like this stuff was heavier than me, I'm pretty sure at the time. What do you remember about, you know, like some of your sets of gear? Like, I know you've coached now, so you see how gear has transitioned, and it's, I mean, maybe a little bit of a nerdy question. But, you know, when you see the new gear, are you like, oh my goodness, if I had that, I would have played 30 years in the NHL, or I would have been the fastest NHL goalie. What's it like for you?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. You know, the gear we had back then, I mean, it hurt in practice. I mean, it was funny because, well, you're showering after, so the guys are going, looking at your body, it's bruised, and he goes, I gave you that one. They're pointing at you. You know, I hit you on the shoulder, and when I was goalie coach in Columbus, I had the opportunity to put the gear on because one of our goalies, finger off the shoulder or the elbow, and I'm waiting for that pain. No pain. I was going, whoa, is this any good? Because practice was not really all that enjoyable. But back then, the guys, they keep their shots down. They respected their goalies. They didn't want to hurt them because they knew the gear. We thought it was state-of-the-art. You know, the gear has revolutionized goaltending. I mean, I really have a lot of respect for my comrades back in the days in the 80s and early 90s. Well, even the early 90s, the gear got better. But, we were warriors. I mean, you had to be to play that position. It hurt in practice. And putting the gear on, back, I don't know, it's been a while now, but the gear was, I didn't feel a shot. It was fun. You didn't have to worry about pain or hurt.
That seems like, the best part about goaltending. When, you see those old chest protectors get me every time. I mean, there might as well have not been anything. Might as well put a second jersey on and call it protection. Clint, I got to ask you a guy that...
I look at my rookie card, hockey card, and I'm like, it looks like I'm just got a jersey on. You can't see.
We can see your biceps in there.
No bulky equipment.
Clint, I got to ask because, you played on some great teams too. And I mean, I think back to those Buffalo days and, guys like Alex McGillney. One, what was he like? And, two, I guess we'll double load this question in a sense of who was the best hockey player you played against? Because there's so many great ones. But, you spent some time out in Buffalo, so maybe you didn't get to see, Wayne and those guys as much. But, I'll leave you at that one. What was Almo like? And who was the best player you ever played against?
Oh, without a doubt, Wayne Gretzky, Mary Lemieux. I mean, those two guys, they weren't that good. I gave them all their confidence because they scored so much on me. But, those two guys were just absolutely amazing. And even to this day, I don't think, and we got some great players in the game now. The first guy I think of is McDavid there in Edmonton. Those guys were just incredible, and the other part, I think Alex McGillney. He came over from Russia, and I was his first roommate, He could not speak a lick of English. And it was funny because he was he had some issues. He hated flying, and in Buffalo, he just couldn't get on a plane, so he'd take a limo to certain cities, and we get on our plane and fly, and he'd meet us there, but he went in a limo, and he definitely got over that fear and was able to fly with us again. But it was funny, he was such an extremely great player, but even as a rookie, he's kind of had a different, I don't know if it's a Russian thing or what, but he'd skate to the blue line on a drill, and he's supposed to skate hard all the way in and try and score on the goalie. No, he'd flip the puck in. I mean, absolutely just a feeble wrist shot and then go to the corner and line up with the guys at the drill. It's like, what are you doing?
That's crazy. You were his first roommate, though. Who would have thought? I think that's, a guy who is very disputed whether he should be in the Hall of Fame or not. So it's always an interesting topic there. Clint, obviously, I mean, your career, I mean, it spanned a long ways. You played on multiple different teams. You had stops, Buffalo, Washington, Quebec. And then, after the incident, I believe it was 89, I don't know if it's fair to say, but I think that your career maybe wasn't as great as you would have hoped. Obviously, things don't go as planned for most goaltenders. But, in the later starts part of your life, I think you're able to look back and really get out a message to a lot of the younger hockey players and people in general with your book, A Matter of Inches. I mean, it's a fantastic read for anyone who hasn't read it. It's definitely something that you're going to get glued into. I mean, once you get a chapter in, you're not stopping. So Clint, walk me through that. What I guess, when did you decide, hey, I want to do a book? Like, you know, I believe it was a Dan Robson, I believe, who helped you write it. And I know he's done a few others. What, walk me through that process from your perspective.
Well, you know, I don't know my whole history. You know, I struggled mightily with disorder. So writing the book was, you know, very difficult. It was hard opening up old wounds. You know, but I didn't realize how many people struggled, that do struggle, like I have. So, you know, where I am today is basically I'm a mental health advocate. I'm a public speaker. You know, I do a lot of charity events. I'm trying to help people that are struggling like I did. And it's important that they know that they're not alone, that, yeah, this guy played the NHL, and they're going, wow, he struggled. So, yeah, hockey gave me that platform.
Now you're a mental health advocate. You're seeing some of these kids come through the NHL nowadays with so much pressure and that. You know, are any players reaching out to you personally? Are teams reaching out to you to get you to talk to the players? I know it's crazy times, you know, even for myself playing. In a team atmosphere, you don't always feel comfortable reaching out, talking about some of those things.
Yes, sir, and I know what you're trying to get at, and I it's a stigma, and it's still there, and that's what we're trying to break, is that, you know, Michael Landsberg coined the phrase, you know, you're sick, you're not weak, and we as athletes, and especially when you're, you know, kind of elite athletes, whether it's at the junior level or NHL, it's a stigma because we're trained to be strong and mentally tough and push through. But, you know, that's where it's important to understand it's a sickness, not a weakness. And that's part of what I public speak about and try to. And yes, I have worked with and talked to mostly, I did a talk with the WHL a few years back, the coaches and general managers, because we've had some suicides in this game. And at the pro level, retired level, and at the junior level. And it's important, my message is, do you want this to happen on your watch as a coach or a GM, one of your players? We got to be mentally aware that people do struggle. And, you know, stress is a big, here you go, but stress is a big stressor. And, you know, it can wear on these young men, and so it's important they learn that they're not alone, and they can reach out to a Clint Malarchuk or whoever else is out there, you know, mental health advocates.
Clint, it's such a powerful message, and I'm glad that you're open about it. I'm glad that you're, you know, willing to talk with these coaches, these managers, these players about it, because, as you said, you know, Mike Landsberg, it's, you know, sick, not weak, and it's about getting the conversation going. I know there's guys that I played junior against that, you know, committed suicide. It's terrible, but, you know, if they don't feel comfortable talking about it, That's where we can be better as a society. So I'm glad that you're able to open up about it. I really think that anyone who hasn't read your book, definitely, that's a must read. Where can people find you? Where can people connect with you? You know, if they want to get you out for a public speaking event, maybe after, you know, COVID slows down a little bit, but where can people find you?
I have a website. It's Malarchuk.com. It's called The Cowboy Goalie. you know, because of my background with being a cowboy and a goalie. And my email is canuckranch@yahoo.com. Canuck Ranch is, you know, CANUCK, ranch, all one word, @yahoo.com. And I get a lot of emails. I get Facebook messages and everything, and I do follow up on every single one.
Clint, you're the best. I guess I didn't even get a funny story out of you. I kind of breezed over it once I got thinking about Alex McGillney and Gretzky and all those guys. Do you have any funny stories from playing Quebec? I'm sure you had some characters on that Washington team too. Like, you got one funny story that's your favorite you can tell?
Well, I've got many favorite and funny stories, but I remember my rookie year going into our fitness training, and there was this guy, kind of a heavy set guy, and he's riding the bike, and he's kind of just a stationary bike, and he's kind of just pedaling through, and he's got a cigarette in his mouth, and he's talking away in French, and everybody's laughing. So I thought, this guy's a character, kind of a joker, but it was in French, and I couldn't understand it. And so I said to somebody, I thought it was a trainer calibrating the bike, getting it ready to test all the players. And I said, who's that guy? Everybody's laughing, and they go, oh, that's Moose DuPont, our captain.
Oh, different times back then, eh? That's hilarious. I mean,
oh, yeah.
You didn't play with Guy Lafleur, did you? Or were you there when he was there?
No. I was against Guy all the time.
Oh, yeah, okay. I heard some funny stories from guys who had played with him about his, wasn't afraid to smoke during games if he felt necessary.
Oh, in Quebec, my God, we had 5 or 6 smokers. Here's another funny story for you. I got called up, or maybe it was training camp, I can't remember, but I was third goalie. So it was Dan Bouchard was number one, Michel Plasse was number two. Bouchard came out of the game, I can't remember if it was an exhibition game or we were splitting the game or whatever. He came out, and Michel Plasse goes in, and all of a sudden there's a whistle that blew, and the linesman skates up with a pack of smokes and a lighter. Because Plasser used to keep his smokes in his pad on the bench, because right away when the period ends, they go to their area where the 5 or 6 guys that smoke could smoke. And he forgot to take the smokes and lighter out of his pad. He went in the game and they fell on the ice.
You're kidding me. That's hilarious. That's hilarious. Oh, man. I can't even imagine. Like, you know, what would happen if that's on national TV nowadays? People would lose their mind.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Clint, thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time.
All right. Hope you get this editing over.
Clint Malarchuk right there. Huge thanks to him for hopping on the show. We've got to wrap things up, though. Be sure, get your hat ordered in by Friday. We appreciate all the support. Huge thanks to Clint Larchuk as well, Adam Erman Trout, our boy Jeff Beck at 12 Ounce Sports, Zingo TV Channel 761. Until then, everyone, have a great day.